chapter 23, we'll talk about breast pathology. And we're going to start off with looking at one of the most common causes of breast lumps. A study was done a few years ago where they took hundreds of patients and then they categorized what the lump turned out to be. And if you take a look at the sidebar comment on the side of the page, which talks about the most common causes of breast lumps, you'll notice that the number one cause of a breast lump in a woman is just fibrocystic change. Number two was normal breast. There was no disease. Her breast was just lumpy. And finally, number three was cancer. Number four is a benign tumor, a fibroadenoma. So on the exam, if they give you a lady with a lump breast, the two things you want to differentiate are fibrocystic change versus malignancy. So let's talk about fibrocystic changes first. The old name used to be fibrocystic disease. It's very, very common in the United States, usually affects women in their reproductive ages, 20 to 50s. It may produce a palpable mass or multiple nodules. Most commonly involves the upper outer quadrant of the breast. That's where the most breast tissue is. I'd like you to refer to table 23-1, which lists the changes you'll see in fibrocystic. Some of the changes are non-proliferative. Those are fibrosis, cyst formation, apocrine metaplasia, microcalcifications. The other changes are called proliferative changes. These include ductal hyperplasia, sclerosing adenosis, and small duct papillomas. Let's now go to table number 23-2 and talk about the relative risk of developing cancer. You'll notice that for the non-proliferative changes like fibrosis, cysts, metaplasia, and some adenosis, there really is no increased risk of cancer. For sclerosing adenosis, ductal hyperplasia, and papillomas, on the other hand, there is a slight increase in risk. It's about 1.5 to 2 times normal. And finally, for the exam, if they give you fibrocystic changes and tell you that there is atypical ductal or lobular hyperplasia, that is a very big risk factor. In fact, it's about 4 to 5 times normal. Okay, let's go down to table 23-3 and just talk for a moment about the difference between fibrocystic changes and breast cancer. For fibrocystic changes, it tends to be bilateral, involves both breasts. There tends to be multiple nodules. There is a variation with the menstrual cycle. You have cyclic pain and it gets larger during the menstrual cycle. During pregnancy, fibrocystic changes tend to regress. Let's compare that with breast cancer. It's usually unilateral. It's usually a single nodule. There's no menstrual variation. It tends to be painless and does not change during pregnancy. Okay, let's talk about some benign neoplasia of the breast. In a young woman, the most common cause of a nodule in the breast that's a neoplasm is going to be a fibroadenoma. It is a benign neoplasm. Usually affects females under the age of 35, and the presentation is going to be a very mobile, movable, rubbery mass. That's classic. When you excise it, you will notice on gross examination, it is a very well-circumscribed neoplasm. It tends to have a tan appearance, and you may actually see some cleft-like spaces. Those are the ducts. Microscopically, it tends to resemble normal, so you'll see a proliferation of stroma, a proliferation of ducts, and a proliferation of lobules. There is one variant that can be more aggressive. It's called a phalloides tumor. It's a variant of a fibroadenoma, usually occurs in older patients, and on microscopic, you'll see an increase in cellularity and stromal overgrowth. When this tumor recurs locally or metastasizes it, it's now called a malignant tumor, or a cystosarcoma phalloides. That's the malignant variant. The next benign neoplasm is called an intraductal papilloma. These tend to present as bloody nipple discharges, and they involve the large ductal structures under the nipple, usually the lactiferous sinus. And obviously they have a papillary pattern under microscopy. They're completely benign. You excise them, you never have a problem again. Let's move on to malignant neoplasms and talk about carcinoma of the breast. Let's talk about the epidemiology. It's one of the most common cancers in females. In fact, it's estimated that 1 in 9 females will eventually develop breast cancer. Notice that it's more common in the United States than Japan, and the incidence is increasing. Let's look at some of the risk factors. It increases with age. Big risk factor is somebody in your family who's a first-degree relative who has breast cancer. That increases your risk. For the hereditary breast cancers, it only accounts for about 5 to 10% of all cases, and it's associated with BRCA1 and BRCA2. It's also associated with P53 germline mutations, the Lee-Fromini syndrome. What else is a risk factor? Well, if you've had a prior breast cancer, you're at increased risk. Next is exposure to estrogens. If you've had a long length of your reproductive life, if you've never been pregnant, if you're obese, if you've had exposure to exogenous estrogens, all that increases your risk. The last thing is if you've had fibrocystic changes with atypical ductal or lobular hyperplasia, that also increases your risk. Let's talk about the clinical presentation. Nowadays in the United States, the most common presentation is going to be these tumors are detected by mammography. You detect either an area of irregular calcification or architectural disruption. The other way these tumors can present is they can be detected by palpation. And most commonly it's detected by the woman. She'll come in and say, "Doctor, I have this nodule here. Can you please examine it?" Other clinical presenting signs and symptoms are nipple retraction. This is an aggressive tumor. It causes a lot of tissue damage. You'll have wound healing, granulation tissue comes in. Often there's a lot of fibrosis. And what do all fibrotic scars do? They contract. Well, when the tumor has contraction, it can actually retract the nipple and give you nipple retraction, or it can retract the skin and give you skin dimpling. The other thing it can do is it can attach itself and fixate itself to the chest wall. That's a poor prognostic sign. Now, where do breast cancers most commonly occur in the breast? Usually in the upper outer quadrant. Again, that's where most of the breast tissue is. Now, on gross examination, this is a malignant tumor, so it tends to have a very gray-white appearance. It tends to have very ill-defined margins. In fact, it usually looks like a star. It has a stellate outline to it. There are a number of histologic variants under the microscope. You should be familiar with at least ductal versus lobular carcinoma. For ductal carcinoma, that's the most common type. It's about 80% of the tumors. The tumor will form ducts. It also forms a lot of desmoplasia or fibrosis. For invasive lobular carcinoma, counts for about 5 to 10% of the cases. Microscopically, it looks very characteristic. The malignant cells will line up one after the next. It looks like they're online waiting for the movies. They call that a single file or Indian file pattern. It's characteristic of invasive lobular. Now, why should you be able to identify that? Because lobular cancers have a higher rate of being bilateral and multifocal. A couple of other variants you should be able to know about. One is called a mucinous carcinoma. If you look under the microscope, there's tremendous amount of mucin production. In fact, you'll see pools of mucin. In the pools of mucin will be floating the malignant cells. It tends to have a little bit better prognosis than a run-of-the-mill ductal. Another tumor that has a better prognosis is called tubular carcinoma. It rarely metastasizes and has an excellent prognosis. Another one in your handout is called medullary carcinoma. This tumor has a marked lymphocytic host response. Your body's responding to this tumor. So again, it tends to have a better prognosis. And finally, the last one is called inflammatory carcinoma. This is a clinical form. Woman will come in, her breasts will be all erythematous and edematous. We call that inflammatory carcinoma. Why is it edematous and inflamed? Well, because the tumor has invaded the lymphatic spaces and is blocking them up. So, do you think inflammatory tumor will have a better prognosis or worse prognosis if it's already in lymphatic spaces? Well, it's already metastasizing, it's going to have a poor prognosis. In fact, it has the poorest prognosis of all. And by the way, the skin changes when it becomes all edematous and red. People say it resembles an orange peel, so they've called it peau d'orange. clinical feature. Okay, let's talk about prognosis in breast cancer. On the exam, if they ask you what is the most important prognostic finding, it is the axillary lymph node status. By far, that's the most important. What else is important? The size of the tumor. What's the type of the tumor and what's its grade? What's the ER-PR receptor status? That's important for prognosis and for treatment. We can use tamoxifen if the ER is positive. Another important prognostic factor is overexpression of oncogenes, especially CERB2, also known as HER2-NU. Whenever that's overexpressed, the tumor has a higher rate of proliferation, is going to be more aggressive, okay? So that's CERB2. Last prognostic factor is the flow cytometry. An increased S phase or increased DNA ploidy are poor prognostic factors. Let's go on to the treatment. How do you treat breast cancer? Well, locally, you've got two choices. You can do a biopsy followed by radiation, or you can do a mastectomy. Now, under the microscope, you should be able to identify at least the two most common variants, histologic variants, of breast cancer. The most common type is called invasive ductal carcinoma. It accounts for about 80% of breast cancer. The tumor will form nice round ductal structures, and they'll be surrounded by a lot of fibrosis. We call that a desmoplastic stromal response. The other type you should be able to identify under the microscope is called invasive lobular carcinoma. It accounts for about 5 to 10% of cases, and under the microscope you'll see these small, bland, round cells. And they have a very characteristic pattern. They tend to line up one cell after the next in what's called a single file or Indian file pattern. It actually looks like the tumor cells are lining up to go to the movies. Now, why is it important to identify the invasive lobular cancer? Well, because this tumor has a high incidence of multifocality and bilaterality. So you got to be able to identify it. Some other variants that you should know about include the mucinous carcinoma, or also known as the colloid carcinoma. Under the microscope, this tumor produces a tremendous amount of mucus. In fact, you'll see large pools of mucus in which the tumor cells are floating. It tends to have a slightly better prognosis than a typical ductal cancer. Another variant is called tubular carcinoma. You should know about this one because it rarely metastasizes and has an excellent prognosis. Another variant I'd like you to know about is called medullary carcinoma. I want you to know about this one because under the microscope, your body has a brisk lymphocytic response. A very brisk host response. So the tumor will be surrounded by a lot of lymphocytes, and therefore it has a better prognosis. The last variant is a clinical variant. It's called inflammatory carcinoma. Basically, the woman will come into your office, and when you look at her breast, it'll be edematous. It'll be all erythematous. In fact, it sort of looks like an orange peel. We call that appearance peau d'orange. Now, why has it become all red and edematous? Well, it's because the tumor has invaded the lymphatic spaces under the skin. So you think it's going to have a better prognosis or a worse prognosis? Well, it's already in lymphatics, it's metastasizing, it's going to have the worst prognosis of all. Okay, let's talk about prognosis for breast cancer. On the exam, if they ask you what is the most important prognostic factor for breast cancer, you should say the axillary lymph node status. By far, that is the most important. Some other factors that are important are the size of the tumor. What's the histologic type? What's the histologic grade? ER-PR receptor status. That's important not only for prognosis, but also for treatment. If the tumor is ER positive, you can treat with tamoxifen. Another important factor is overexpression of oncogenes, especially oncogene CERB2. The other name for that is HER2/NU. When this is overexpressed, the tumor tends to proliferate more. It tends to be more aggressive. So it has prognostic implications. In fact, in the future, it's going to have treatment implications because we now have antibodies against this oncogene. The last thing is flow cytometry, the S phase and DNA ploidy. Those are also prognostically important. Now let's talk about treatment of breast cancer. For the local disease, you have two choices. You can do a lumpectomy followed by radiation, or you can do a mastectomy. In either case, for prognosis, you need to take out the axillary lymph nodes, to find out if there's any metastatic disease. For metastatic disease, if the person has an ER-positive tumor, you can use tamoxifen. If they don't have ER-positive, you usually utilize chemotherapy, especially with the drug CMF. Let's talk about other malignancies in the breast. The other big one that the exam asks about is Paget's disease of the nipple. Patient will come into your office, and they may look something like this. I'm going to refer to this photograph. You take a look at the nipple. The nipple is over here. And notice it's all red. It's erythematous. It's sometimes crusted, this yellow crusting. Sometimes it oozes as well. And this is all caused by tumor invading the epidermis. The tumor cells are actually within the squamous cell epithelium. Now, why is this important? Well, whenever you see this change, Paget's disease of the nipple, there is almost always an underlying malignancy. So now you've got to search to find the underlying cancer where this tumor came from. And that will conclude the breast pathology chapter.